Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
This presentation is proudly sponsored by Plimovent. Plimovent is a driving force in advancing firefighter health and safety. Plimovent's diesel exhaust removal systems feature virtually 100% source capture to eliminate diesel exhaust from your firehouse. Plimovent diesel exhaust removal systems meet the requirements stated in the Fire Act Grant Program Guidance for Modifications to Facilities and have been recognized as a high priority in this year's grants. Visit www.plimovent.com or click the link on this page to learn more about their exhaust removal systems.
Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com, and this is the 2009 Assistance to Firefighter Grants podcast, the first part. And please tune in next week for part two, where we talk to some departments who have had success. And I believe each one of the participants has actually been awarded several grants, so make sure you tune into that podcast next week. Today we're going to talk about the 2009 application period, which opens today, April 15th. It closes May 20th at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And this year so far, according to FireGrantSupport.com, they have allotted $510 million to fire departments through the AFG program. So today we do have Brian Bickers, who is the Firehouse.com grants correspondent, and we're going to kind of go over some of the new guidance for this year's program. So, Brian, thank you for joining us on this podcast.
Not a problem. Glad to be of assistance.
And I guess this year, let's start off with who can apply for the AFG in 2009.
Well, there haven't been too many changes from past years. It's still mainly fire department centric grants. They have clarified a couple things from past years on the eligibility. It's basically any nonprofit, career, volunteer, combination fire department that protects a geographical area that is not just federal lands, whether preservations or airports, with the exception, of course, of Native American reservations, or I guess are technically federal lands, but of course they're self-sufficient, recognized kind of as a municipality in that sense. So they, of course, are eligible as well. They did change it a little bit, because there are some areas where they're, because of course the FAA requires a fire department on site at an airport. Airport fire departments that do have formalized agreements to respond automatic mutual aid to an area outside of the airport property are eligible now. If it's an area, you know, just the airport and that's it, they don't run off the airport, they can't apply. But if they have an automatic mutual aid basis, and they're not a federal fire department, like the civilian fire departments that protect military bases, they are ineligible. But if it's an airport that the that has their own fire department, smaller municipal or county airport, if they have agreements and are required to run off off the airport site and assist the local municipalities on an automatic mutual aid basis, they are eligible, which is a change from past years. They did clarify a little more what an affiliated versus non-affiliated EMS organization is. Basically, if and what they're talking about affiliation, it's affiliation with a hospital or a doctor's office or a clinic or things along those lines. If the EMS transport organization receives any kind of funding, they're allowed to use their facilities at no charge. They're taking care of their staffing, their equipment, or any kind of apparatus. That creates an affiliation, which makes that that organization eligible. If they are contracted solely by the hospital or surgery center or otherwise on a fee for service to be the 911 provider, they are allowed to apply, because that way they're technically only getting paid any time they're used. They're not entirely supported at that point just because they exist. It is under the rescue organizations. They are normally under the EMS side, but if you don't provide patient transport, you're not eligible. If you do EMS and technical rescue or even fire rescue support, you can apply. It's the patient transport requirement that makes you eligible. As well as in past years, any municipality or tax district can also apply using their tax ID or DUNS number on the behalf of their jurisdiction and the fire departments that operate under it. In a lot of areas of the country, municipality is technically contracting the volunteer department or even in some cases multiple single station companies that are separate volunteer organizations themselves, but they contract them to provide protection for their jurisdiction. Once that happens, of course, if the town or city applies on behalf of the organizations that they contract with, then the organizations themselves can't apply as well. I've run into that in a couple places where we've got three or four independent, registered nonprofit volunteer fire departments in one town. They're all contracted. They all run technically automatic mutual aid with each other, but the geographical area is just one town. The town can apply on behalf of each one of those three companies, and then they can't apply themselves. Otherwise, it'll actually kick out all of the applications.
All right. Well, that's a few changes, so thank you for filling us in on those. The applications, how many can be submitted as you do the breakdown between the vehicles, the regional grants, and then the equipment grants?
It still continues. They made the change in 2007 to allow people one application in each category. So we can still do an equipment grant. Every applicant can still do host a regional grant. And then also you can submit a truck application on top of that. So essentially every applicant can have three this year again.
Okay. And as you go into each of the applications, what are the priorities? Have they rearranged those for this year between the equipment, the regional, and the vehicles?
There have been a few changes. Some things have been pulled out. Some things did drop in priority. The bread and butter is still the same as it's been since the beginning in 2001. They're still looking to make sure everybody's at least got the basics. Bunker gear and protective clothing still take top priority. Air packs, thermal imagers, and hose, and things filter down from there in the equipment category. Training, of course, has come around to be more important because, of course, if you don't know how to use something or you don't even have the basic training to firefighter one or at least the minimum in the state, depending on what volunteer or career, really not supposed to be doing the job, so receiving the clothing is encouraging bad habits, for lack of a better way of putting it. So certainly they want to see that people are trained to the basic levels to do structure firefighting and wildland if you do it. And then anything else we ask for in the equipment world, they want to make sure that when it's delivered and in place, as many people as possible know how to use it. So, if we're going after extrication equipment or something like that, we've got to be able to say in the narrative portion, yes, we've got people trained to, certified vehicle extrication. It's not going to be a problem, or we'll take care of the training on our own, or if the funding's not there, include the training as part of the grant. So no matter what, by the time the grant is awarded and taken care of and equipment's in place, as many people as possible in that organization know how to use the equipment and do the right thing with it. In past years, it's been where they've handed out awards, go down for an audit or stop by, and the equipment's not really used, it's not on the apparatus because nobody's gotten trained to use it other than the vendor came by, showed them how to run it, and that's actually not really doing any help for the community if the equipment's not making the calls and the people don't know how to do it. So that's going to be more more of a requirement in the applications to certify as part of your narrative portion that, yes, we either know how to use it, we need the funding to know how to use them, or we're in the process of taking care of that ourselves. They did take a couple projects that have been done in past years, video conferencing for one, equipment and related for either training or meetings or otherwise. That was made in an eligible project this year. They rearranged a little bit in the building modifications. Top priorities now become sprinklers. Of course, you know, we've had a few dozen stations in the past couple of years burned down that weren't protected by sprinklers. So now in the building modification category, sprinklers are the top priority, then alarm systems. That's been clarified as number one. Number two, station-mounted exhaust systems come in as number three, and then vehicle-mounted exhaust systems have actually dropped in priority, as well as station generators are now the two lower in that category. In EMS world now, in past years it has been that basic life support, training, and equipment was the priority. Now it's turned around. It's been felt apparently through their surveys and studies that advanced life support is now the priority, I guess, as the, you know, Americans are not exactly known for being in the best shape in the world as a country. So cardiac emergencies and certainly, you know, having a BLS and being able to do CPR and AED is great, but take it to that next level and go to, you know, EMT intermediate or paramedic, depending on the state certifications. That training and that equipment is now taking the top priority. And with communications, everything is now going to the state. Every state has a state community interoperability plan, SCIP. Anything radio or communications related is going to be checked through the state to make sure that the jurisdiction governing the applicant has a SCIP on file with the state, and whatever that project is in line with the state's plan for interoperability. If it's not, it's obviously going to be turned down. So certainly everybody that's going after anything communications related should make sure that the funding they're going after is in line with the state's plan to make sure, especially if it's an equipment upgrade, if somebody's going from low band to VHF or trunked or whatever else has to be out there. For one, it's got to be in line with that plan. Number two, part of that plan at this point, because the FCC is changing over in 2013, all public safety communications have to be narrow band. So we have to make sure that any equipment we're asking for in that realm is going to be narrow band capable. Again, otherwise, if it's not, it's going to be turned down. Under the regional heading, it's the same as 2008. Bunker gear and air packs cannot be done as a regional project. It's mainly focused for training and communications, especially, I mean, unless you're physically on an island, most fire departments in the United States are running mutual aid with their neighbors. And recognizing that we've all got to work together, you know, fire ground's only as unsafe as most unsafe condition. Well, if you're mutual aiding with departments and they're not trained at a basic level, you're not trained at a basic level, we're not really helping anybody in that sense. So training, certainly, if it's a regional need, we should be training everybody in a region to make sure that we benefit as large an area as possible. Under that, of course, is training classes, training props. The props themselves haven't changed about what's eligible, but included in that now, we can get a mobile live fire training trailer for a region that can be included, even though regionals used to be, if it only physically sat in one spot, it couldn't be regional. But here, as part of a training prop, it's going to go around to the region at that point for the benefit of increasing everybody's knowledge level and skill level, so they can be included as part of a regional training grant. Communications, of course, communications is all about interoperability. Normally, most communications upgrades should go through as a regional effort, because it doesn't make sense to carry, you know, just one department in a, you know, 10 department county to get the new radios and no one else has them, or make the dispatch upgrade and otherwise. It should be comprehensive enough that it does cover the normal geographic area and benefit everybody. Other projects, it's kind of a can be done as a regional. Water supply has been done in the past with a large diameter hose, you know, accountability systems, mobile data terminals. The water supply now and the accountability systems and the stuff that can, but can't be seen in some lights as being a regional application. They're allowing them, but now the requirement is going to be to explain in the narrative portion why it is being done as a regional effort instead of just a single department application. So it's going to take a little more finesse in these types of applications to make sure that if we're going after an accountability system, why is it, you know, why does everybody need to have this at the same time? Why is this a regional application? Same thing with the water supply. Hose only goes on one truck. Why is that a requirement in this specific application for it to be a regional effort? Those are just going to have to be, they're going to be more scrutinized this year than they have in the past. As far as hosting, I've seen recently some conflicting information come out in various articles and statements. So just to cover that, it does require a normally eligible applicant to be the host. So it does have to be a fire department or an EMS organization that can apply by themselves. Even if it is going to be like a county communication system upgrade, and even if the county offers to pay all the matching requirements, it has to be a fire department within the county applying. The county may not necessarily be the applicant at that point, or the fire marshal's office or otherwise. The host does not need to pay for everyone. They do need to coordinate the payment, but it's been allowed in the past, not encouraged, but in the past, if for some reason one department can't fulfill the financial obligations of their portion of the order, certainly you want to work as much as you can. If you're awarded, you have a year to come up with the funding and find all the different avenues. But if in the end one department has to drop out, their equipment doesn't get purchased at that point, and the grant just gets reduced. The whole thing doesn't just get thrown out, and the host isn't required to pay for everybody else. Now, certainly they're going to be the ones coordinating to make sure that everybody does pay, but the host is just taking responsibility for the reporting, handling the questions, but they don't have to. It is a requirement to report to the ENFR system if awarded, but of course, the host being the host, you can't force another organization to do anything. So at that point, yes, it's highly encouraged that everyone involved in a regional application report to ENFRS, which is something we should be doing anyway, but nothing will come back on the host if someone underneath doesn't. They do realize that we are all separate entities with separate rules and governings and jurisdictions, so we can't exactly force anybody to do it from ourselves. But of course, DHS and program staff will highly encourage everyone to do that requirement. And underneath the vehicles, there really wasn't any major changes that are really going to affect the program. They did, if you look at the grid from 2008 versus 2009 now in the vehicle priority matrix, there was some rearranging done in priority 2 and priority 3 levels. Priority 1 stayed the same, and as even DHS program staff will say, there is no expectation of anything but Priority 1 awards. Very few Priority 2 applications even make peer review at that point. For those that didn't know that, not every application makes peer review, and they did make a clarification on that in the guidelines that they only review twice as many applications as they have funding for. So with $550 million available, they're going to be reading about $1.1 billion in requests. And in 2008, there was $3 billion in requests. So approximately half the applications that get submitted overall don't get reviewed, but on average, 75% of the vehicle applications don't get reviewed. There is that computer scoring level that picks out the highest priority statistical requests, and then, of course, through the review process, they pick out the best arguments supporting those statistical needs. So, of course, only half of the applications that make peer review tend to get funded. It is basically only going to be Priority 1 awards, and I did find, as I traveled around and did the workshops around the country and in discussions with other people, that a lot of people didn't realize that you could put in 3 applications now since 2007. So more and more people that did need vehicles hadn't been applying the past 2 years, even though they could, just because they didn't know about it. So last year, I believe, it was about 7,500 applications for vehicles. I wouldn't be surprised myself if that reached 9 or 10,000 this year. So it is going to be even more competitive. It is going to be the highest priority one vehicles going through. It is going to be a little tougher just from the financial standpoint, because there's only $4 million added to the category because only 25% of the funding can go towards vehicles in AFG. So this year, it's going to be about $141 million versus the $137 last year. Well, at the same time, NFPA 1901 changes have added a good chunk of money between an AED and EMS equipment now being required on the vehicle. The EPA changes on emissions have also driven up the cost. So even if there were no more applications, the same application last year for a $250,000, you know, basic Class A pumper may be in the 270 range or 275,000 range. So the cost of the requests are going to go up. It's going to be even fewer applications getting reviewed as far as a percentage, and then, of course, fewer awards coming out at that point. They are keeping with the theme that if you've been awarded a vehicle in the past by AFG, you can still apply again. Certainly that affects your vehicle age and your makeup, but as is the reasoning when they opened it up in 2007 to allow that again, you know, everybody needs, especially in a rural area, everybody needs a basic, Class A pumper, a brush truck, and of course, with so few hydrants and across the country, tankers are again a priority in the rural areas. Just because you got one doesn't mean the other two categories are taken care of. So you may not receive as much empathy from a reviewer, or at that point, if you've been awarded a truck in the past versus someone that hasn't been awarded, but people have been awarded more than one truck for that reason. If you got everything in your fleet's 30, 40 years old, yeah, you may have gotten a tanker, but a tanker doesn't really drive off-road and handle the brush fires or, you know, have the pumping capabilities to be an attack engine. So there have been a couple people that have received more than one truck. But normally it tends to be that in a review process, they're probably going to feel more like someone that hasn't gotten a truck probably should get their first one before somebody get their second one. But, again, that's depends on the individual reviewers. Most of them stick to the guidelines, and if people are eligible and people qualify and they are a priority, they'll get the funding. Underneath the training for vehicles, NFPA 1002 and 1582 cover the requirements for operating vehicles, fire apparatus in this country. We did get a clarification that Department of Transportation physicals for commercial truck drivers will not count. The NFPA requirements from 1582 are more in-depth and strict than the DOT requirements, so they will have to be done. Either they're done now, they're done as on the department's dime before the award comes through, or the physicals can be requested as part of the grant, if the applicant doesn't have the funding to be able to make that happen. And it does only need to be done for drivers. So if there are members of the organization that do not drive vehicles, it's not required that they get the physicals. But if they do become a driver at some point, it will be a requirement that they do get the physical before operating the vehicle. Same thing, it'll be certified driver-operator classes for anything that's got a pump on it. Those will be required. And also as part of outfitting the truck in a vehicle application, loose equipment that's required by NFPA 1901 can be part of the grant. So if there'd be hardship for the department to be buying, an AED on top of providing their matching as part of the grant, they can add the AED in, they can add the training in. If you need hose and nozzles and other loose equipment like that, that can also be added in. And it's judged separately from the need for the vehicle itself. It's added on. The need for the vehicle is judged. The funding is justified. They'll add on the extra the extra funding for the equipment or the training. But the equipment is limited to $25,000 at that point. What they're looking at is essentially if you're replacing an older vehicle, not all the equipment on that vehicle is probably trashed. If it's usable, it should be moved to the new truck. They have continued from last year. Urban and suburban classified community departments can ask for more than one vehicle. Maximum of three vehicles, maximum of one per station. So an urban or suburban department that has two stations could ask for two vehicles, one for each one. If they've got 10 stations, they could ask for a maximum of three. They don't have to be the same type, but of course, when we're talking trucks, and we just said trucks are getting more expensive, the funding limits for the program are still in place, which is populations under 500,000 residents can receive a maximum of $1 million in federal assistance. Between half a million and 1 million residents, the maximum is 1.75 million in federal assistance, and over a million residents can receive 2.75 million in federal funding assistance. So even if you're urban or suburban classification, if you have less than half a million residents, you could ask for, you know, with four stations, you could ask for three pumpers if the need is there. But at that point, the maximum assistance over all categories is $1 million. So if you get $300,000 for each of those, and then you're trying to get air packs and need another $200,000 in federal assistance, that would be over the mark. So you wouldn't be able to get the full assistance for all the projects at that point. But then again, as far as I'm concerned, that would be a great problem to have to receive that much federal assistance just in 1 year. So it is still have to watch things like that, but they are basically letting us apply for anything and everything that we think we need and can justify, and let the program flesh out who needs what the most. We have received, you know, we have people that have received both a regional and an equipment grant, a regional and a vehicle, or even equipment and a vehicle, both in the same funding year. It's happened both in 2007 and 2008, and I won't be surprised to see the same exist in 2009.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
This presentation is proudly sponsored by Plimovent. Plimovent is a driving force in advancing firefighter health and safety. Plimovent's diesel exhaust removal systems feature virtually 100% source capture to eliminate diesel exhaust from your firehouse. Plimovent diesel exhaust removal systems meet the requirements stated in the Fire Act Grant Program Guidance for Modifications to Facilities and have been recognized as a high priority in this year's grants. Visit www.plimovent.com or click the link on this page to learn more about their exhaust removal systems.
And then the breakdowns as they do for each allotment, can you kind of go over the career departments versus combination versus volunteer and that breakdown?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the in past years it's varied, not too much different than in past years. What they've looked at is they went by population of the country. In past years, it was approximately 56% of the U.S. population was covered by volunteer and combination departments, and 44% was covered by career. And that switched a little bit now. So the limits they have as far as the types of departments, at least no more than 45% of the funding in any category in the entire program, a total of 45% of the funding is the maximum that can end up with career organizations. So no matter what the scoring comes out to be, if they award 45% of the eligible money in AFG to career organizations, they'll actually skip at that point because that's a, you know, it's a statutory requirement that that's the most they can hand out. At least 34% of the money has to go to combination departments, and at least 21% of the money has to go to all volunteer departments. So at least, again, 55% of the money in the whole program has to go to combination and volunteer departments. So they just switched what that 55% is made up of. In past years, just by statistics, career tended not to apply as much. just because it's harder in those situations, especially as the economy's gone down, to get approval to apply. Most career organizations are protecting more than 50,000 in population, which makes them a 20% match. So the projects tend to get more expensive. Most career organizations have more personnel. They've got more vehicles. They've got, a larger quantity of need when it comes to, gear and air packs and things along those lines. So that 20% number keeps creeping up. And, of course, in a time when a lot of municipalities are losing their state aid and laying people off, they're not going to come out for or commit to a 20% match on a project. So in past years, it's been less than 45%. That mark has been going to career organizations, but that's just because they've been applying. They haven't been applying for as much of the funding. Within the breakdowns across all applicants, 2% of the funding, which is about $11.3 million, is what is broken off for EMS applicants, EMS organizations applying. That's the most that category is going to receive between vehicles and equipment. And as I mentioned, 25% of the money is the maximum that's going to go to vehicles, which is about just over $141 million. And within that EMS breakdown of $11.3 million, 25% of that, just short of $4 million, that's the most that's going to go to EMS vehicles because of the program. But within that, 3.5% of the money, which is just short of $20 million, is EMS projects for both fire department applicants and EMS applicants. $3 million is the minimum that has to go to foam and foam-related equipment. And actually, within the $550 million total of the entire AFG, is the fire prevention portion. They've allocated $35 million out of that $550 to go to fire prevention, but that application is not happening right now. As part of the law that authorizes the equipment and vehicle portion AFG, fire prevention is part of it. That's actually going to be a later application period in the fall.
All right, and then I guess as we look to this year's programs, what are some of the pitfalls that the applicants seem to see? I know a lot of it's repeated year after year. Having done this podcast for several years now, there's probably a top 10 hit list of common problems. But what are some of those problems that we find year after year?
Well, a lot of it goes back to, as you said, we've covered it in past year's podcasts and even some of the articles I've put on Firehouse. It's a lack of assessments and really looking at, it's general grant theory. No matter what the program's handing out, when somebody is applying to a grant program, it's about the need of the applicant, not necessarily, not what the program's handing out. So departments have to look at, applicants here have to look at, what do we need first? What do we really need overall, and do an assessment based on that. Look at the, status of our gear, quantity, condition, look at the air packs, what edition of NFPA 1981 they meet, how old they are, their condition, is there any equipment we're missing based on the calls we go on that we're unprepared on for and leaning too much on mutual aid, and look at that to really see what can't we live without? In any category of anybody, ask anybody what they need, and it may travel to the want list, but what's got to be, true needs, what you can't live without versus what would not be nice to have. And even then, even when people figure that out, say, well, we need the gear, need the air packs, need some training, need some radios, asking for too much at one time tends to put us down in priorities. And scoring, because all of those different items are different priorities in the program. So by themselves, they may be high. Mixed in with some other things, they're going to go downhill. With protective clothing for the primary mission being the number one priority. So structural fire department, structural bunker gear is the number one priority project that you could apply for in AFG. Asking for anything else with it, even if it's air packs, is going to bring the score down a little bit because everything else you could ask for is a lower priority. So by definition, it's going to bring the score down versus just asking for structural bunker gear by itself. Since all the statistics mixed together between population and call volume, square mileage covered and all those things, as well as the age of the equipment asking to be replaced, all those numbers pile in there. The more we ask for, the lower the cost benefit for that application, because those numbers don't change. So the more we pile on, the less likely it is to happen. Sometimes also people don't ask actually for enough. They explain that, you know, they've got so many issues, you know, and a simple example would be, you know, keeping with protective clothing, they have 20 firefighters and 20-year-old gear. But to keep the cost down, they say, well, let's keep the cost down, keep the cost benefit high, and just ask for 10. Well, the issue is that all 20 interior firefighters don't have safe gear. Just getting 10 sets of gear does not solve the protective clothing deficiency overall, because now we got 10 people in safe gear, 10 people without safe gear. The overall safety level of the organization would not be improved in that case. It would only be improved for half. What they're looking at is 100% solutions to make a particular deficiency go away. So we want to make sure that we describe some kind of deficiency that we've got, whether it's, you know, the gear, the air packs, lack of an adequate tanker, or not enough radios, that when we describe that deficiency, we're actually going to ask for enough of a quantity to make that deficiency go away. A major problem every single year that I run into with people is that they just don't apply. Whether they don't want to get into it, want to deal with it, or don't have the community support to go after the money, you know, 100% of the applications that don't get submitted don't get funded. You got to be in the game to get some funding. They've made it more clear in the guidelines for everybody that, you know, yes, it's a matching program. It's 5, 10, or 20% based on your permanent first due resident population. You don't have to have the money when you apply. You don't have to have the money if you're in line for the award the day they ask you, hey, we're considering for your award. All they ask for is a plan. The only thing you can't do is another federal grant program can't provide your local match. It has to be local monies of some sort. It doesn't have to be cash out of the bank. It can be, you know, your plan can be, well, we're going to run some fundraisers. Or I tell a lot of people, especially if you're going after a vehicle, those are going to be, you know, they're expensive projects, are going to be a large match. You can finance your portion through the vendor. Certainly from a business standpoint, you know, you're going to hand them a large chunk of money in cash to put down on that vehicle. You're only going to be financing a small portion, you know, anywhere from $10,000 to $50,000, depending on what type of vehicle it is and what your match is. They'll certainly more than agree to probably finance that, or even check with your local community bank. A lot of banks are required to do community benefit loans at lower rates, so you could finance it. So even sometimes if you do have the cash in the bank, you know, being uncertain economic times, maybe better to leave that cash in the bank and finance the portion just in case there is something else that happens. So, you know, I tell a lot of people, don't look at the dollar matching and not apply. If the need is there, we need to solve the need. You know, it is competition. I do have a lot of people that have been successful in getting a lot of funding and solving a lot of deficiencies, and, you know, where they used to spend a lot of money in repair and maintenance on an old equipment or old vehicle, now that that's been taken care of, those line items have decreased. They freed up some funding to go into, you know, other projects on their own and handle them. And they choose not to apply, which I respect completely, because it is a competition. Other people have the needs, but that doesn't mean if you don't need something, don't ask for it. You know, the program is independently minded. It judges every application based on its needs. Put it in front of the app, you know, put it in front of the program. Let the program decide who really needs what they're asking for, and let it do its job. You know, I tell a lot of people, they look at it and say, well, geez, you know, we need the gear. You know, we only get $5,000 to $10,000 a year. It's going to be hard to come up with, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 extra dollars. You know, I said, don't hesitate to apply. Don't let that be, you know, block you from making, you know, safety improvements that your department needs.
That's great advice as far as some of these departments that are struggling for the money, so... what are the requirements as far as if you do receive an award, what do you have to comply with?
Well, there's a lot of program, a lot of rules in there when obviously you're taking somebody's money and everything comes with strings attached, but it's nothing highly preventative. They want to make sure everybody that receives funding, every applicant that receives funding, has to report to NFIRS for the next National Fire Incident Reporting System. It has to be done for the next year during the period of performance. And, of course, they like to, you know, continue. Certainly, a lot of the needs they pull come out of, you know, and develop the, you know, the need for better fire protection is based off of those reports coming all the way up to the U.S. Fire Administration. Well, if they don't get the reports, it seems like the fire needs going away. You know, they say fires are down, and a lot of departments across the country are seeing more fires. Well, if the reports aren't being submitted, then the statistics say one thing when in reality it's the other. So certainly it's a good thing to report to NFIRS whether or not you get an award. But it is a requirement if you take their funding. Retaining all the paperwork related to the grant as far as the orders, you know, the award letters, bids and things like that all have to be kept for at least 3 years. And one thing, a lot of people, I've heard a couple places people have been hesitant to apply because they say, well, you know, the city or the tax district, they'll slash, you know, my funding in that line item. You know, I've got, you know, a couple grand in for, you know, bunker gear replacement in every budget year. And they say, well, if I get a grant for new bunker gear, they're going to slash that line item as part of the law governing the program, which means we have to comply to it. Like, you can't adjust the budget in that sense. So, you know, essentially, you know, even the municipal departments that have to report to the city council or, you know, county government for their budget, we can just point out to them very simply, no, the law prevents you from eliminating that line item in my budget next year just because I got the grant. So that way we still, you know, retain some of our funding even though the economy's going down. And there has been, they have clarified a lot of the procurement language. We've always technically Title 44, the U.S. Code, is open procurement process. So especially when it comes to federal funds, we've got to comply to that. That's definitely something everybody needs to read when they go out there. Essentially, you've got to have multiple bids come in. Everything's got to be documented. You know, there can't be any, the bid specs have to be open enough that they're not proprietary to one manufacturer. And they don't have to, a common misconception is low bid has to be taken. It doesn't. It's the low bid that, that meets the specifications, but also any reasons you deviate from the low bid pick has to be documented as well. And there are valid reasons for doing that. In-state company, in-state service, history or relationship with the company, the manufacturer, or the products. And I tell a lot of people, you know, if you're getting a chance, you know, to buy something that's, you know, you're replacing that's 10, 15 years old and you've been wearing the stuff that long, there's been a lot of changes in equipment over the past two decades. Get out there, try some stuff on. You know, as a firefighter myself, I don't want to be using something that's uncomfortable, it doesn't fit right, or is, you know, difficult to use in the heat of the moment. You know, bring some products in, test them out, and verify, you know, you're going to be using this stuff for the next 10 or 15 years, or in the case of a truck, 20 or more. You want to make sure it's the right stuff. So they want to see that people are going out and actually putting their hands on the things, evaluating the products, verifying that it is the, you know, the best fit. So there's actually two ways they do it that have been allowed or, you know, approved as far as evaluation goes at bids from the federal level, which is a documented evaluation. So if you get the award, you can go out and do an evaluation, verify that it was, you know, two or three or more manufacturers worth of equipment that were played with. Here's who played with this, you know, evaluated the equipment, tried it on, beat it down, tested it, cut the cars with it. This is the recommended product. Then you could technically write a brand-specific bid spec because the evaluation showed that's what we would come up with. That's the brand, you know, brand X is what everybody wants. So it doesn't matter what the pricing comes in, this is the best stuff for us. Or do the exact opposite, put a bid out for, you know, 30-minute high-pressure air packs. pricing comes in, go in, evaluate the products, who's got the features, who's got the service, debate everything, recommendation comes out. As long as all that is documented, documentation in this country rules, as long as it's all put down on paper, again, it doesn't have to be the low bid. You know, departments can buy what fits their needs based on their evaluations. So it is a lot. They're coming down a lot more. And this is all federal grant programs. It's not just the AFG. It's Title 44 is, you know, federal law across everything. So certainly want to make sure, you know, if you're awarded, they will take awards back. They will refuse payment, transfer money if these open procurements are not held with. So certainly, since a lot of the time, you know, they don't transfer the money to pay for whatever you're awarded for until after it's delivered or within 30 days, and they do reserve the right to inspect how your bid process was handled to make sure that it does comply with the open procurement. And if it does not, they're not going to allow the money transfer. And if it was, then, of course, they'll allow it.
And then if you do apply and there are some monies left over, what's the process that the department has to do with that in order to make sure they still get the grant funding?
There's a slight change in this for 2009, and there's always been some confusion about what excess funds are. When you apply, you have to buy how many of what you said you were going to purchase. You can't change quantities or anything like that, you know, go after 20 sets a gear and then just buy 18 and claim, oh, I got money left over. You have to buy the quantity of, you know, the items that you said you were going after. Now, always tell everybody, go in a little bit high, go in at list price, you know, look at inflation, you know, so whatever price, you know, if someone gives you a price for, well, if you bought it today, it would be this price. You want to add inflation because it could take up to a year to actually make the purchase, and, you know, the way things are, inflation at least goes up 3% a year, and sometimes people have, you know, design changes or other requirements, of course, like the vehicles with the EPA changes that is out of control of the manufacturer. Prices are going to go up, so always want to add a little bit to it, but depending on when your award comes out and you go out to bid, sometimes the bids are lower than the amount of money that was authorized for various category. So once you buy the quantity of the items you said you were going to buy, if there is money, you know, if that total is less than the total of the application, that's what's called excess funds. At that point, the greater of either 1% of your entire award total or $5,000, whichever is greater, you can pretty much use for anything that was eligible in the program. And the way they calculate the $5,000 is it's $5,000 total, combination of local money and federal money. So a 5% match department would have $4,750 as the maximum amount of federal excess money they could use added to their $250 to make $5,000. Now, certainly, if something came in at $6,000, the most they could use would be $4,750. They just have to pay $1,250 on their own. The required minimum, you know, 5%, $250 plus the extra $1,000. But that money is flexible. They can use it for anything that's eligible in the program. So if somebody gets some gear and they have money left over, they want to buy, you know, the DOT required safety vests or flashlights or some pagers or extra gloves or anything like that, just to have them because they tend to fall apart after a lot of use. You know, a computer for training or, you know, training materials, anything along those lines, that money is flexible. And that can be done without approval. There's no amendment needed for any of that. It can just go out and be done. Fire prevention has always been allowed in the past. That does require an amendment, and there is no limit on fire prevention money. So even if, you know, go out for a vehicle and it comes in way, you know, get a much better price and you've got $20,000-$30,000 left over, that could be used for fire prevention in its entirety, but that does have to be an amendment. The amendment is basically a very short version of the fire prevention application itself. So it is limited to 4,000 characters instead of 20,000 in a regular application, but it's the same bullet points. They want to know what kind of project you're implementing, why it's such a need in the community, how you're going to monitor it, how you're going to verify and make improvements to it. But all the money that you have left over could be taken to fire prevention. And then an addition for this year is that no matter what quantity of excess funds you have left, up to half of it can be used specifically for training or health and wellness initiatives. So again, if we had $20,000 left over, up to $10,000 of that could be used for physicals, could be used for immunizations, training classes, training materials that are needed. That does have to be done in an amendment, though. So it just has to be authorized by DHS, explain that the money is left over, explain what it's going to be used for, and then approved. Or if all those initiatives are taken care of and an applicant has nothing to do with the extra money that's left over, you just deallocate it and say, we're not going to spend it. They put it back in the pot, and then they end up making some excess fund awards much later in the year. The excess fund awards now for 2008, all the decisions have been made for those applications, but several people were turned down, notified that if funding comes available, they might be awarded. But that's not going to come around till probably August or September when the program cleanup is happening, and pretty much everybody would be closing out their 2008 applications, then they'd really know what kind of funding they have left over.
All right, I guess to wrap up, you know, what are we looking at as far as AFG in the future? We know, you know, there's been some changes to SAFER, and then the stimulus package that came out. What else do we have in the Fire Service grants to look forward to over the next couple of months?
Well, specifically with an AFG related, as part of the stimulus package, the SAFER program for the hiring portion has always been a diminishing match over the five-year performance of the project. The federal match was 90% the first year, 80 the second, 50 the third, 30 the fourth, and then 100% of the costs for every position had to be paid for entirely by local funding. I've seen it two different ways, and no one's been able to clarify it as of yet. I'm getting mixed signals on that one, but a portion of the match or all the match has been waived. I've seen it where it was the first 2 years of local match have been waived, or all 4 years of the local match have been waived for hiring projects for the 2009 SAFER. The fifth year is still a requirement, and it's still a requirement that 100% of the costs, salaries and benefits, still have to be paid for by the local entity. But at least you get a little break the first 2 years or first 4 years because of the economy being down and people, you know, hopefully avoiding layoffs or had to have made layoffs, can recover some of that funding and take a little less of a hit till we, you know, the economy recovers over the next couple of years. The recruitment retention side has never had a match. That's still always been 100% money for volunteer organizations. So that hasn't changed. The stimulus package, as well as the waiving the match, partial match or full match, again, we'll still wait and see what the decision is. Also did have a fire station construction program included. They put $210 million. We have found out it is going to be run through the AFG format. So just like SAFER and fire prevention are part of the equipment and vehicle portion that's open now, there will be a station program. It is no match as well. So for a lot of departments, traditionally at the federal level, it's either been USDA or HUD Community Block Development Grants has been the lone option for construction for fire stations or renovations. Now we've got this program. It's $210 million for the entire country in a no-match project. It's new construction or renovations. Some of the initial documents we've seen on this, of course, is going to be they're looking towards compliance with NFPA 1500, which, of course, is their sprinklers, exhaust systems. They're looking at ADA requirements, of course, bunk rooms, both gender, you know, bunk rooms and showers, bathrooms, and things like that, you know, unsafe buildings. You know, it doesn't have to be a whole new station. It can be renovations, can be an addition. It's basically, you know, anything that's needed construction related for fire stations in the United States. And it does have to, you know, as we've heard out of most of the stimulus package, shovel ready. What they're looking for is projects to be as ready as possible to be completed, because the performance period here is going to be 2 years. So everything will have to be done within 2 years. Now, obviously, sometimes weather comes into play, but what they're looking at, you know, if you're building a whole new station, if it requires architect drawings, if it requires historical preservation permits and studies, you know, wetland studies, or, you know, Native American burial ground type studies that have all had to be done in the past for a normal construction project, those all have to be taken care of for this as well. It has been mentioned there is no match, but consideration will be given to people that are able to provide local funding towards it in some capacity. So my advice to a lot of the people we work with coming up to this program, Ben, if you know you're building a whole new station and, you know, any building in your community has to, you know, involve an architect over a certain dollar amount or have those studies performed, get them paid for now and get them done and out of the way, so by the time the application period comes in, the plans are in place, the drawings are done, the studies are done, so essentially the only thing that that department would be waiting for would be the money from the award. Those types of situations are going to be the higher priorities for funding, because they are going to be ready to go, and they are the most likely that would be completed within the two-year period. If they don't require that, I know a lot of departments, you know, across this country, a lot of, you know, I talk to a lot of people, I deal with a lot of, you know, almost every state, and a lot of varying from highly municipal and urban departments to the most rural. I got people who'd be more than happy to have a concrete floor in their station, or plumbing, or even walls. So it doesn't have to be anything all brand new, type Taj Mahal construction, but a lot of people, a lot of fire stations in this country are, you know, steel prefab type structures. In those cases, they're, you know, a lot of, you know, building codes, they're allowed. The architect works for the builder to verify that it is a proper engineered design. They are lower cost, so it's pretty much just, you know, there's no, some of those studies may not need to be done. If it's not necessary to have those costs or, you know, an architect in place for those drawings, you don't have to pay for it, because it is part of getting the building delivered at that point. You know, as anything else, the cost of the project is going to be, you know, part of the cost-benefit equation. The format is probably not going to be too much different as far as, you know, the need for population statistics and call volumes and things like that, where those, the higher those numbers are, the greater your score in AFG and fire prevention, and of course, safer. It's going to be no different here. You know, I tell a lot of people, look, you know, look basic building, you know, maybe look steel prefab. You know, it may not be the prettiest thing in the world, but, you know, the whole goal is better than what we have now. You know, may want to leave off a lot of brick fascia, you know, or stucco or things like that, but, you know, still want a functioning station, you know, with plumbing, HVAC, et cetera. But we really don't want to dress the thing up probably with, you know, marble floors and, you know, a lot of woodwork and things like that. Just get it in there. If you want to do those things, I did talk to somebody that was a, as a requirement of where it's being, you know, where the station would go, the land they have, it backs to residential area. It's a deed restriction on the property that everything be, you know, brick fascia. Well, that's something they can't get around, but, you know, again, consideration to those that would be able to put funding towards a project. That was my recommendation, was, what, you know, go after the money to build the building, but, you know, find local loans or fundraisers or something, have the brick fascia and the other deed restrictions for, you know, the look of the building come out of local money, you know, and just get you know, get the building built, you know, ask for that out of the grant application. If anybody's broke ground, or, you know, leveled the ground or started, or it's halfway built, all those projects are ineligible. It's completely new construction or new renovation projects only, that much we know. And that's a SAFER is normally application period in June, July. Fire prevention is normally in the fall. And, of course, AFG is normally in the March, April range, like since it just opened today. They're keeping with that. My guess is going to be probably somewhere in the summer or fall range. But if that, you know, piques anybody's interest and you need a construction-based project, it's just like anything else that we need as a department. do the assessment, do the homework. You know, regardless of who pays for it, you need to do certain things to, you know, get a construction project handled. Get a lot of that handled now. The rumor mill says maybe it's going to be done at the same time as a SAFER program. Maybe it's going to be done in August. Maybe it's going to be done at the same time as fire prevention. So certainly, you know, if departments are going to be putting in for, you know, one or more of those programs at the same time, get your homework done now. So a lot of those studies on, you know, stormwater runoff or historical, those all need, you know, take time, take months. That's something to get the wheels rolling now, because once the application period opens, it's going to be 30, 35 days, just like the rest of them. You're not going to get the results in time. You're not going to be able to certify, to certain requirements that the application will need. And then basically you'll be ineligible to apply at that point, or not very competitive. So like any other project, we need to have our homework done well in advance of the actual application period.
All right, Brian, well, thank you very much. Again, this is the first of two parts of the 2009 Assistance to Firefighter Grants Support. I'm sorry, Assistance to Firefighter Grants podcast, the AFG podcast. We'll be posting another one a week from posting this one, relating to some of the success stories of departments that have won multiple grants. We also have a couple of links for resources. One would be firegrantsupport.com. That'll be at the bottom of the podcast player page. And we'll also put a link to Brian's website, which is VickersConsultingServices.com. So if you have any questions, you can go down and click on either of those two links, and you can get some assistance there. Brian, anything else before we wrap up this podcast?
No, I just encourage everybody to get out there, and especially with the economy down, and you need the funding. The funds are out there, but if you don't do the homework and go after them, obviously you'll never receive them. So get on top of the applications, get them in, and let's make some improvements in our departments.
All right, Brian. Well, thank you very much. And as Brian said, please do make sure your department does participate in this year's program. We did a poll on firehouse.com starting on Monday, and waiting for it to load here now to get the most up-to-date numbers. 64% of the folks who visited the site said they will be putting in for it, so that's very encouraging. So, check back for the next podcast next week, and thank you for listening.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.